Everybody, welcome to the Shit Show with J-Bo. This is J-Bo. This is me. Do you like the name J-Bo? Do you ever wonder, ever curious where I came up with the name J-Bo? If you're shaking your head, no. Well, I'm going to tell you anyway, but I hope you're curious because it's slightly interesting. So here goes. Basically, I was in a band called Smile Brigade. Actually, it was before Smile Brigade. It was in a band called J. Hiram Boggs and Satisfaction. And my drummer, my trumpet player, he wasn't mine, actually. I say that. It's like this weird, egotistical, possessive thing that leaders of bands seem to do. He was his own person. He's a great guy. His name is Charlie Walsh. And Charlie Walsh is from Kentucky, and he is just a wild man. But a smart guy, like, not reckless abandon, not gonna fight you, any of that shit. He's just an incredible personality, and I met him in Seattle at Blue Star, etc. It's this restaurant I worked at. Played him a little demo, he said it was pretty good, got him to play with me, and we became, down the road, J. Hiram Boggs and Satisfaction. It was a great band, I thought. We never quite recorded what I would have liked to have recorded with that band. It was kind of an organic psychedelia. And what I mean by that is I had an acoustic guitar, so that's organic, right? Organic. It's strings, it's wood, it's natural acoustics for the most part. Aside from the fact that you have to amplify it artificially, which kind of fucks it up, but whatever, you know? And then we had a bass, which was totally electric, so that's not organic, I guess. I mean, the strings are, but you know, it's an electric deal completely. Then we had drummer and a violinist and a trumpet player. I will tell you that violin and trumpet together is an amazing combination. Violin can be very soft and can pad things nicely because, you know, you can hit more than one string at a time. It's a soft-sounding instrument, mostly. At least the way my friend BJ played it was soft. And Charlie would play trumpet. And those two sounds, it was so beautiful. The trumpet was very shrill and just one note piercing. The violin offset that. It was perfect for me. And we had a great band. Wow. I started off just putting a 5-song EP together with that band, and man, it was okay. To be honest, it's really fucking slow, and I don't like it. I think one or two of the songs are alright. But after that, we ended up doing a year long, maybe 2 years we played, and we did these great things. Like, we got to open up for Modest Mouse, and Eric Judy from Modest Mouse played in my band, and I was so proud of those things, and so happy at the time. And J-Bo came about. My name's Jesse Boggs, and Charlie just said, J-Bo, like J-Lo, and I thought it was kind of funny. Then one night I was doing karaoke, and I said the name J-Bonimus to the guy who took my name down, and there it was, J-Bonimus, J-Bo. So that's the story. I was named by Charlie from J. Hiram Boggs and Satisfaction. That band was probably the closest I ever got to a very comfortable, very perfect musical situation where it felt really, really great. You know, that's half the battle when you're playing music is you don't even have to be playing with the best players, although these guys were really good, but it just felt right, you know? And if I felt empowered doing it, and it just kind of, it ricocheted, you know? It ricocheted through people's consciousness, I thought, when we were good, you know? But did these cool things, played the Seattle Art Museum, like 60 people showed up. I know it doesn't seem like a lot, 60 people, but on like a Sunday afternoon, that was a lot. I was really surprised. And I don't know. I didn't mean to get sidetracked on my band, J. Hiram Boggs and Satisfaction. But that's how I got called J-Bo by Charlie Walsh. Great dude from Kentucky. And can you hear J. Hiram Boggs and Satisfaction? You probably can. You could probably find it online. I would recommend the song Ashes and Graves and Oak Tree and possibly Fae. There are two songs in there that are so slow, Brother and Fish-themed, I think. And I got my buddy to the... I lived with this guy named Manglef, and check him out, too. He's, you know, I don't know that... I guess I have become a little bit, you know, like... I don't know if you'd call me a conservative. I'm not exactly sure what a libertarian means, but certainly further to the right than almost everybody I knew in Seattle. And... the reason why I say that, the guy who did the artwork for the EP of J. Hiram Boggs and Satisfaction was named Nathan Henderson. And he works under the title Manglef, and it's a really fucking creepy reason he names his band that, or sorry, his band names his himself, his persona that. He told me once, and I was intrigued and freaked out. He said that Joseph Mengele, the Nazi doctor of death, made skinny people. And that's what he does. So Manglef, go look him up. By the way, he's not into Nazis. He's not like a racist or a fascist. In fact, he went so far the other way, which is why I brought up my political alignment. Because the left in America doesn't... he lives in Berlin. The left in America doesn't compare to the left in Berlin. I went out and visited him. And I couldn't even reference things that I liked from America without him basically... being drunk and a complete fucking prick. Like, yeah, that would be something you would say, isn't it, Jesse? It sounds pretty American. And just the snide and sneeriness. So when I say the left here is very moderate compared to the left in a place like Berlin, not exaggerating, you know, but given the history of their extreme politics, I guess that makes sense. He's a fantastic artist, though, despite the fact that we could hardly stand to be around each other because of his hatred of America and my, I don't know, living in America. You know, he'd tell these stories, you know, that really weren't true to me. And it was just fucking bizarre, man. I love the guy, though. I know it doesn't sound like it. And I want to hang out with him again. I want to go back to Berlin. But I'm not going to talk politics, you know. Because I can't shut up. I can't shut up. And he couldn't either. And you get drinking involved and it's just, it can get a little nasty. I don't want to fucking be that person. Maybe he wants to be that person. He said he had lost other friends that I know because of that. So anyway, check out Manglef. Amazing artist, and he makes skinny people. He makes real, real skinny, like skeleton people. And his latest thing was like white wigs, like Victorian era white wigs on, I don't know, people in positions of power, like judges and senators and just George Washington. Excellent guy. Manglef, check it out. I went to see a Beatles cover group the other night called 1964, The Celebration, I believe. And it was so good. These guys looked a lot like the Beatles. Probably not actually what they look like. But, you know, when they put on the dress, you just got the impression because you weren't up close. And from a distance, it looked like the Beatles were playing. And that was the least impressive part of it, although that was quite impressive, the fact that they pulled it off, the look. And they didn't do different eras like the Beatles. I've seen a couple Beatles cover groups now, and Rain was really good. There's one called Rain. And they were great because they went through all the eras of the Beatles from 1963 up to 70, and they dressed appropriately for every era. But these guys pretty much stuck to only the music that the Beatles actually played. The Beatles stopped touring in, I believe it was early 1966, and their last gig was in Candlestick Park. And just from scratch, this band, it was just a drummer, bassist, guitar. And I know, obviously, that's what it would be. But it was such a full sound in the harmonies. And to think that the Beatles created so many good songs, it's, despite how big they are, I still think they're underrated, you know? Because, like, look, I've written songs I've written some decent songs. I know people who've written songs. I've listened to bands all my life that have written a lot of songs. Nobody has ever written that quality and that quantity like the Beatles had. This band, 1964, The Gathering, played for an hour and a half. These songs are 2 minutes long, and they just packed it full. And the harmonies, the bass playing, the guitar, it was great. It was fucking great. I was singing along so loud, which I do that at concerts, you know. I don't mean to annoy people, but I'm that guy, and I just kind of assume that nobody can hear me because the music's so loud. But then I realize people can fucking hear me because they're standing right next to me. I just hope that I'm not singing out of tune, you know, and that they don't all stand up and walk out on me, because that would be awful. I don't mind being the loud guy. I just don't want to be the loud, out-of-tune guy. Do you guys follow? Sometimes I can't help myself. I've always sang. I don't know if it's a coping mechanism. I've always just sang, like, my entire life. When people are around me that I know, they start singing around me because they know that, like, that's what I do. And I don't know. It's like some communication back and forth or something. It's interesting. But I went hoarse singing at that Beatles concert. I mean, the greatest moment for me, the greatest vocal moment of that was when the John Lennon sang This Boy or That Boy. And it's a really kind of a cheesy old school song of the Beatles, but he does this part where he's like, till they see you cry, that boy. You know, and it just like, bam, it just hit me. It was fucking awesome. And they had the banter back and forth, and the Beatles are one of those lifetime bands for me, and I know they are for a lot of people. They should be for everybody, I think. They seem like the songs, it's like I had a little thumb drive with all the Beatles songs just planted in my head pre-birth, you know. I don't remember listening to them, but every single song I know by heart. I've been to Liverpool, I've done Beatles tourism, I've sat in John Lennon's bedroom and dreamt what it must be like for him. I sat on the front porch at John Lennon's house where I knew that was their echo chamber where him and Paul wrote songs at 15 years old. And I could hear the same exact reverb that they would have sang, that they would have heard, you know, 50 years prior, 60 years prior when they were teenagers. And how cool would that be to do like to start a tourist thing where it's like a sound tour, you know, something where you're going to where these super famous bands did this, and you're going to find the reverb, the natural reverb. You're going to find that staircase where John Bonham played at the bottom and the reverb, and they'd record at the very top. You're going to see all these places where these sounds were made, and you're going to, I don't know, maybe they could be recreated, or maybe you could just go to Abbey Road, you know, that type of thing. But that would be radical. Go to places to recreate the sounds of how it was done by these people. I felt really blessed to be able to do that, but the first time I ever heard the Beatles, it was I Want to Hold Your Hand, and I was in the back seat. My brother was in the front seat, I think. My dad played it, and I literally stood up in the back seat. I was maybe 4 or 5. My brother would have been like 2 or 3. He's a hipster, right? Like he heard everything when I heard it, but he was 3 years younger than me, so earlier than me, right? So I was sitting in the back seat. My dad played I Want to Hold Your Hand, and I just started kind of like clapping, attempting to clap along, and I couldn't quite get the rhythm. I have much better rhythm these days. I can clap along to Hard Day's Night. Sorry, I Want to Hold Your Hand. But I remember just going, who is this? Who is? And my dad remembers it as well, and it was just this very spontaneous, like none of us had heard about the Beatles, nothing, but we heard it once, and we literally just jumped up and said, who is this? The Beatles, to me, represent the very best humanity has to offer as far as synergy goes. Humans oftentimes are meant to work together, and sometimes when they do, the output is exponential, you know? Like, you know, the Beatles were pretty good solo guys. They were pretty damn good, and there's some of that stuff I love. But together, it doesn't matter what they were saying. Like, Yoko Ono talks about, oh, John Lennon was so much better as a solo Beatle. But she was thinking about his message that coincided with her political message. I think, this is my opinion, I'm not speaking for Yoko, just I've heard her say that his solo work was better than the Beatles, and I'm thinking, but Yoko, You don't understand. The energy, the synergy of those four humans together from Liverpool was greater than any political message he could have ever put out. You know, imagine there's no country. It's easy if you do. No, nothing to kill or die for. No religion too. You know, beautiful communist sentiments. But "She Loves You" is fucking, I don't know, is it bro-y? Is it dumb? Is it wimpy? I don't know. But when you hear it, it explodes, and it's the energy exploding, and it changed the world. So no, Yoko, Lennon solo was not better than the Beatles, because the Beatles had synergy, and they did what humans in their best form working together can do. Changed the fucking world. Can you guys tell I like the Beatles? I'm guessing. Huh. So, what else? I'm going to do a new segment on each one of these shows. See, I'm doing one of these shows every week. I'm trying to do it for a year, and I've been pretty happy with the downloads. People seem to be downloading it out there. If anybody's listening, go to Facebook page, look up TSS with J-Bo, or maybe it's The Shit Show with J-Bo, one or two. It has a picture of, what the heck's that guy's name? He's an elderly black gentleman who was super dirty. Anyway, his name escapes me right now, but he's on my page. Go like my page. Go give me a comment, you know, or go to iTunes, subscribe. Please give me a 5-star review. Yeah, if you can't give me 5, then don't do it all. Whatever. Just do it as a personal favor to me. It makes me feel good. I'm trying to get some people to, I don't know, pitch in for a commercial here. I'd love to get Spirit Airlines or maybe, what would be good? Celsius, the beverage, which I love. To pay me to talk about them. So get those. I want to get those numbers up. I'm going to do a new segment here every week for the next few weeks. It's called A Ridiculous Thing That Happened During My Childhood. And it's going to be just some story. I've got a lot of stories. And it's funny how that works, where I tell my stories sometimes to people. Like I was at work not too long ago, and a woman, we had just fired one of our main growers. And he had some story about he'd lived in Hawaii and how he knew all the locals. But then he had these other stories that he had built these cars for people. And he's kind of an accomplished dude. And he kind of struck me as, I don't know, maybe totally full of shit. But really, he just struck me as like a guy who's done some shit. Kind of weathered, kind of a smart dude. Like, you know, he was growing here from California. And I figured he had done some things. But I heard a woman at work mention how she thought he was just a liar. You know, she's a great person, you know, but she's kind of a townie. She hadn't been very far out of probably the town. I love the word townie. It's so funny. She was a townie, and she just like, who goes to Hawaii? Who knows the locals? Who does all these things? And I remember thinking, he sounded believable to me to an extent. Like, he's mid-50s, and he's lived around. Like, just because you hadn't done it doesn't mean you need to besmirch his character. And call bullshit on what he had done. So I started telling my stories to her on purpose. And just some of the more outlandish ones. And she would just be like, is this bullshit? I said, I don't think it's bullshit. I mean, it could be bullshit. I literally, it's my stories are either true or I'm so fucking crazy that I assume they're true. And I've created my entire own reality. I don't think that's true because I do have corroborating stories, so they must be true. But isn't that interesting? Like, somebody asks you if your stories are true. What do you mean? Okay, maybe I embellished. Maybe, that's a possibility, but I think they're true. And that's all I can give you. I can only tell you that I think they're true. Because I don't really know. I mean, I think they are. But I would have to call somebody to corroborate right now, which I'm not going to do. They could be all in my head. Because really crazy people just say things that aren't true, and they believe them. You know what I mean? So I learned that my stories seem a little bit provocative, a little bit funny, I guess. So I'm going to tell you a story later at the end of the segment. So happy to get back in the swing of things here at the Shit Show with J-Bo. I'm drinking Bargain Brand Diet Cola. It's funny when you're just on your own like a Rolling Stone. How does it feel? you sacrifice little things. Like, I would rather have Diet Coke. You know, that's probably my favorite Diet Cola. Why did I get the Diet Cola? I don't know. At some point, I just got a taste for it. Then I had a girlfriend who is great, but she drank a lot. And she would drink Diet Coke and rum every single night. So I got used to drinking just straight Diet Coke. I don't really drink too much. But yeah, wait for that story. It's called A Ridiculous Thing That Happened During My Childhood. And it involves a burglary at a very young age. So they confirmed Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court Justice. Distinguished gentleman, evidently. He was besieged by attention from the left, from the media, which is the majority left, is what most people hear. Unless you're listening to AM radio or really like are a devotee to Fox News or alternative musical sources, you know, or sorry, musical. My mind always goes back to it. News sources. And to be honest, I felt like the outrage for a lot of the people, not everyone, the outrage, I felt like it was concocted, kind of pushed, kind of trendy, kind of hysterical. I don't feel that every single person that was yelling shame believed Brett Kavanaugh was guilty. I don't think they cared, and that's the fucked up thing about politics. I think they just wanted to push their agenda and possibly wanted to get on TV and possibly be part of this zeitgeist or being woke. And my God, there are women who have suffered, like obviously, sexual assault, rape. Physically speaking, women aren't quite as strong as men, so I'm sure it happens all the fucking time. It doesn't mean that every single time somebody comes forward, that was the case. Now, if he was a judge for 10 years and a woman came forward, I feel like I'd be more apt to totally believe her. She didn't have a reason to come forward, right? And you might say she had nothing to gain from coming forward here. Okay. But the Democratic Party did have everything to gain for her to come forward there. So it looks like a political hit job. Okay? I think it would be irresponsible for any allegation that came up towards any official, whether it be on the right or left, to just be believed based on their gender. To me, that's so fucking sexist and insane. Like, I don't even understand what the fuck you're talking about. It reeks of everything political, but people are going to jail because everybody should be believed. A woman should be believed. I love women. I was raised by women. Women have been, like, amazing people in my life, you know, like, for real. And those women don't even believe her necessarily. You know? Like, there's a lot of women who don't believe her. And if there was one corroborating witness, if there was one person that said, yeah, I remember that party. I saw that. But there's not. There's not, to my knowledge. So, I would be like Jean-Luc Picard, who's getting whipped every time he says there are four lights when they want him to say three lights, if I said, I believe her, because I don't believe her. I don't believe Kavanaugh either. I just know it looks extremely political and there was zero proof. You know what I mean? And that logic doesn't seem shocking to me. Like, it doesn't seem like that's unreasonable the way I'm thinking. I mean, does it seem unreasonable? I mean, you can hold your fucking sign and you can, we all need to admire women and men and everybody in between, but it's to say you should believe somebody based on their gender. And you know what? Just because I don't believe necessarily, it may have happened that way, but I don't necessarily believe Christine Blasey Ford. Just because it doesn't mean I don't believe other women who do seem credible and don't seem to have a political reason to do this. I don't know, man. It's crazy. It's so crazy. But it's what's happening right now. And I had to talk about it. And those are my true feelings. You like them or dislike them. That's actually how I feel. I just took a drive out to Kecksburg. Kecksburg is a little tiny town, about 11 miles from here. It's funny. I'm in Greensburg, and there's a lot of interesting, weird little shit that happens around here. And maybe that's that way everywhere. I don't know. My father was always really into UFOs and Bigfoot and horror movies and shit. And I realized, like, being right here near Pittsburgh, it's a funky little place for that shit culturally. George Romero, who did Night of the Living Dead, is an unbelievable filmmaker. Night of the Living Dead is still scary as shit. I mean, when those guys are boarded up underground and these zombies are coming in, like, the amount of kind of, you know, the amount of claustrophobia I feel, I can still think about it. It's just, like, dark. And they did a couple other ones. They did Day of the Dead and Dawn of the Dead. And one of those secondary movies was filmed at the Monroeville Mall about 20 miles from here. Night of the Living Dead was filmed, some of it was filmed about in Livermore, I believe. I don't know, 11 miles from here, you know. But I went out to Kecksburg today, and Kecksburg was the site of a crash that my dad said he remembered hearing on the radio when he was about 13 or 14 when he was milking the cows. I mean, this is a farm here. And, you know, he's listening to his little transistor radio, and he claims that back then they said a UFO has crashed in Kecksburg, and the army came and ran everybody off and took it away. So it's been in, like, Unsolved Mysteries, that show, and it's, I was taken there when I was a kid, and it basically looks like an acorn. The UFO looks like an acorn with these strange markings on the side. And I have no idea what it was. It's very interesting. I honestly, like, am kind of on the fence about UFOs. I would love to believe. I really would. But it's kind of like any kind of religion. Islam. Christianity. Buddhism. Some of it's a great idea. Some of them are horrible. There's horrible parts to all those religions, you know. And we got to call them out equally. Or praise them equally for the good parts. But I can't believe in God in that way any more than I can believe in UFOs or ghosts. But I'd love to see one, or Bigfoot. It sounds so great. But when I watch these shows on TV, it's always just, it's kind of like watching a Kurt Cobain story or the Flight 93 story. The ending always sucks because there's never proof, or it's not how you wanted it to end, you know. I wish we could just see some fucking aliens, man. That'd be so cool. I'd immediately become, like, a wannabe expert and think about it and study it completely. Maybe space wars will kill a couple aliens and we'll bring their bodies down or something. Anyway, Kecksburg, there was a crash many, many years ago, and I took my dad out there today. He didn't even remember. He's going through some changes mentally, and he didn't remember that there was an acorn-shaped object. And I guess they're doing a movie called Kecksburg that's coming out next year. It's a very interesting situation. But I'm used to driving these little country roads like a fucking maniac. Like, I don't even realize I'm doing it, because every morning, like tomorrow morning, I'm getting up at 4:40. Everything's ready to go. I throw it in my bag. I eat a bagel, and I literally walk out the door, hit Dunkin' Donuts on the way out, get some coffee, and I'm gone. And I'm flying to Cumberland, Maryland. And it's insane, but I'm just, it's like, it's still dark, and I'm just ripping up the country roads. And the people that have driven with me are a little freaked out. To be honest, they just don't understand at what level I'm operating on. Yes, anything can happen. But I've done these roads for so long, and I've just learned how to fucking be a hairpin turn guy. And you don't realize till there's a guy next to you and you realize that they're like swinging all around and you should probably take it easy. But it's out of habit. So he was freaking out. He was swearing at me. He was just like, "You motherfucker. I'm telling grandma and you're never using her car again." I have a van, then I have another car, but I used my grandmother's car with him because he can get in and out of it. But what's funny is my dad's going through changes, and it is fairly sad. Like, there's some stuff going on. Like, we saw that Beatles show together, and he couldn't even remember the next morning that there was music. He just thought there was some guy lecturing the whole night, and I think he just had a TV on, you know? But in a way, and I don't know what it says about my family dynamic or how I grew up, but I enjoy fighting with my parents, gently arguing with my parents. And everybody would say, "You love to argue, Jesse." And I guess that's true. I don't mean to push people's buttons. But you know what? When my dad's sitting there and he's not saying shit, and it's hard because he won't communicate. And I don't think I did this on purpose, but it's nice to hear him basically tell me to go fuck myself. Like, I enjoy that, you know? Like, I really, really do. It's something that's enjoyable to me. It makes me laugh because it's like it's the old dad I remember, you know, who's piss and vinegar, you know, and funny, like not like a violent person, but just like that man, you know, scary voice. Like, I remember I was cruising around with my buddy Willie when I was a young kid, and we were stoned out of our minds, and I just heard Willie, like I was doing this weird like pissed off voice, but for fun, you know. And he was like, "That's scary, man. That's really scary." And we were stoned. I'm like, "I'm sorry." So, you know, whatever. That's what the voice my dad was putting forth. And it was funny. But at some point, it got a little intense. And I had to say, "Dad, please quit unloading on me. Please quit swearing at me." You know, it got to the point where he was getting pissed and emboldened. I said, "Don't get so bold about it. It's okay. I drive like this all the time." The funny thing is, we never actually found the acorn-shaped object. At some point, he was just pissed for being in the car. We found Kecksburg, and that took us a while because my phone died. If I had my phone, that's how stupid we've become. I mean, I was thinking, what did we do? It was refreshing. I'm like, I'll just find it without a phone. But then you go on your intuition, and the intuition just doesn't really work if you've never been to a place. You know, it's actually kind of funny how reliant we are on our phones. You know, it's like modern convenience is making us weak as fuck compared to our ancestors. We're our minds. I mean, come on. We're basically, we're aided by machines. We're basically fused with machines, and they help us every day with everything. And we, on one hand, it makes us more advanced, but our personal bodies are withering away and dying in our brains and blah, blah, blah. So get the fuck off your phone, man. Start reading more, drink more water, get out to the woods, get off the grid, and build those strong, sinewy muscles and do things that your ancestors have been doing forever. Reminds me of my buddy in Northern California. His name is Colin McCann. Wilderness was his band. Check him out. If you like this podcast at all, go back through and listen to the Wilderness guy named Colin McCann. He's fantastic, dude. I've always admired that guy. And that's what he did. He totally moved off the grid. It's wild shit. And, let's see here. How long have we been doing this, man? What time is it anyway? 8:22. So now is time for that story I was going to tell you. The story I was going to tell you, it's my new segment, A Ridiculous Thing That Happened During My Childhood. I'll have to come up with a little bit of a musical interlude to announce that. That'd be cool. Get some more production, that type of thing. Okay. This story takes place on Volano Beach, which is a subset area of St. Augustine, circa 1981, let's say. I think I was in first grade. And my mom had left my father and moved down to sunny Florida to 210A Coastal Highway in a very cool two-story blue house about 150 yards from the beach. Like, it was very, very close. Across the way, we had... It was a very progressive society. There was a lesbian commune named the Pagoda. So when I hear the word pagoda, I associate it with lesbians somehow. I don't even know if they were lesbians, but they were great little cottages, man. It would have been really cool to live there. And then there was a guy named Guy, and he was gay. He was a gay guy named Guy across the way. And I can remember him. He had like a monk, a balding monk deal. But he was a young guy. He had a smiley face, and he just had like a horseshoe on his head with hair. Super nice dude. Super nice dude. Then we had Paul Boucher, who raised pit bulls in what looked like a lunar landscape in a trailer right up the road. A very nice man. Ended up killing himself. Man, that's fucking tragic. Jesus Christ, he was such a nice dude. Man, watch out for those nice ones, right? They could off themselves, man. The mean ones are staying around. Anyway, me and my mom moved into with my brother, with my grandparents. So it was me, my brother, my mom. My grandparents lived in this great little house on St. Augustine on Volano Beach. It was really a sleepy little town. Now it's just bustling as hell. Luckily, they keep the downtown area very old and Spanish, and it's almost like a UNESCO heritage spot where they can't fuck with it. Great little town if you haven't been there. St. Augustine, Florida. But some reason we moved into a trailer, and I remember kind of liking the trailer. I mean, I don't know. When I say the word trailer, I feel like that's like credibility somehow. You lived in a trailer growing up, but it was totally normal. And there was, I don't know, I was just like a scumbag. I was a little thief or something. I don't know where I got it. Like, my mom wasn't a thief or a klepto. I just... Back then, I don't know. I didn't understand. If I didn't have something, I wanted it, I might take it. Not really, but looking back, I mean, that's the facts of it. And I was playing. There was a kid in town, in the trailer park, named Josh Galumbos, and somehow he had a bad reputation as a bad kid. Looking back, maybe I was the worst kid. I don't really know. But all I know is Josh Galumbos, man, he was a bad kid. I forget if there was a reason for that, but I was playing with another kid in my trailer park next door, and in the trailer, rather, and he had this great box of toys, and I just loved his toys. I remember, like, being jealous or something, you know, coveting his toys, and once again, that's not a seventh deadly sin, that's a Ten Commandment: thou shalt not covet my neighbor's goods, and I was coveting this boy's toys. You know, there was probably He-Man, there was probably G.I. Joe, there was probably some generic little action figures, you know, there's definitely some Star Wars, probably a little Millennium Falcon, like there was some nice little toys, you know. And I left his house, and I don't remember what was going through my head, but I said, I want those toys. And so I picked a time in the middle of the day, somehow nobody was there. Somehow, nobody was watching me. I don't know what was going on. I picked up a rock, and I broke a window. I was like 5 or 6 years old. I broke a window, removed all the glass. I haven't done this since, by the way. Like, literally, I've never done this since. And I crawled in this dude's window, and I can still go back to that same trailer and see the window that's, like, sticking out, you know? I know exactly which window it was. And I got in, and what was that? That was a cool noise. And I remember shimmying between the bed. There was a bed right up against the window. Shimmying between the bed and the window, and like this great amount of pressure, and just pushing through and pushing up and breaking through and being on top of his bed, right? Actually, it was probably his parents' bed, to be honest. I don't know whose bed it was. But either way, I just walked into the closet, grabbed those toys, walked out the front door with the whole box. And the funny thing is, I don't even remember playing with them. I don't. I don't remember even, I probably sat down with them for 5 minutes and went, well, fuck it. These are cool, but moving on, you know? Like, I wasn't even interested in the toys. I don't know what was going on through my head. And my mom came home, and she had been told that somebody had broken into a trailer, and they said it was me. And it was the only time I can remember her, like, spanking me. But she had hit me before a little bit. But this was like, okay, I'm sorry. She's probably listening. Mom, she wasn't, like, an abusive person. I'm just saying, like, things got a little emotional, you know, maybe a little whack here or there, right? But she put me over her knee and, like, just spanked me. But one thing I remember about the spanking was it was very impassioned. Like, impassioned, is that the right word? Or maybe, no. Not, it wasn't passionate. It wasn't a passionate ass whooping, you know, at all. It was like, you did something wrong and I'm not emotional and I'm just going to spank you because this is what I'm supposed to do. It didn't hurt. It didn't bother me, but after she was done, I pulled the ultimate manipulative move and said, it wasn't even me, it was Josh Galumbos, you know. And I blamed Josh Galumbos. And for many years, she felt bad. She believed me. I mean, that's how fucking manipulative I was as a 5-year-old. She felt bad for many years. Then one day, I remember rolling around and I said, hey, Mom, you remember that time, that trailer? I was like, that was me. I did it. Like, that was me. And she felt, I could tell, like, there was this rush of relief, you know. She's like, I felt bad for so many years. Oh, my God, how dare, you know, it was really funny. And we all laugh about it now. We laugh about most things. My mom's a really funny lady. I also enjoy fighting with my mom. But the dirty little secret is I think she enjoys fighting with me, too. She won't admit it, though. Anyway, this has been the Shit Show with J-Bo. You guys are radical. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. My girlfriend listened to my last show and she said, I said, well, was it even listenable? I mean, could you follow it? She's like, yeah, it was like your thoughts were in a blanket and you just like opened the blanket onto the floor and there they were. She said it was very see-through or, you know, I thought that was kind of a compliment, you know, that I wasn't fronting. You know, whatever. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. This is the 4th week out of 52. I don't know. I'd like to think I'm going to do 52. We'll see. But I'm trying to do it for an entire year. So tell your friend, this is a weird-ass show. This is a Shit Show with J-Bo, and we shall talk soon. Thank you so much for listening. And go find us online, and I don't know. Kiss its ass. Kiss its ass. It feels good. I don't know. All right. Bye.